This is Bristol, and you are listening to a podcast from the BristolCon Fringe reading series.
Well, hello everybody, and welcome to the June meeting of BristolCon Fringe. As usual, we have some fabulous writers for you this evening. Just check, do we have any announcements to make beforehand, Joe? Anything exciting happening?
I don't think there's anything mega exciting happening imminently.
Yes, if anybody doesn't have a copy of Airship Shape in Bristol fashion, why not? Apart from that, there's nothing immediately exciting happening in Bristol, although we've got some fun stuff happening. Nick Harkaway is going to be in Bath on Wednesday. That's possibly sold out, but I'll be grabbing an interview off him beforehand, and that should be on Ujima the following week, with any luck. And this week, before I came out here, I recorded an interview with a fabulous new science fiction writer from Trinidad called Rhonda Garcia, and you'll be able to hear part of that on the Ujima radio show on Wednesday. Anyway, it's now time to get on with the entertainment for the evening, and our first reader is going to be David J. Roger, who's written, I think, 8 science fiction and fantasy novels now, and most exciting for me, he has written a role-playing game called Yellow Dawn, The Age of Haster, which mashes up Lovecraft and cyberpunk. So you can tell what I'm going to be asking him questions about when we get to the Q&A session. I have no idea what he's going to read, but I presume David will come and tell us.
Thanks for giving me a chance to read this to you. This is called Shadow of the Black Sun. It's a short story that was commissioned by John Houlihan, who is doing an anthology called Dark Tales for Acton Cthulhu, which will be out for commercial release in December. So, it was only approaching 8 o'clock in the evening and the sun was setting already. Every day it sank lower, faster, and got darker earlier. The approaching winter made Eric Simon uneasy because he knew his small squad of men were scared. In 3 days it would be dark by 7:30. By the end of the month, it would be dark by 6:30. By the end of November, it would be dark by lunchtime, and the sun would not rise again until after breakfast, only 2 hours of light a day. And then December. In December, it would stay dark until the first week of January. Eric stepped out the X-Stein he'd been smoking and immediately sparked up another one. Inhaling the packer with a grimace, he preferred the lucky strikes he had traded for in Narvik. But they were all gone now. The stench of gasoline from the American Zippo lighter flooded his nostrils. The flame fluttered in the chilly breeze blowing into the bunker through the long, thin observation gallery. He snapped the Zippo shut, his eyes small, triangular and grey, and nervously raked the jagged black rocks hemming in the treacherous entrance to the harbour. This was a tiny fishing settlement of Svolvær on the east coast of the rough jumble of islands making up the Vesterålen and Lofoten Islands hanging off the mainland of Norway. Bleak but beautiful, the surrounding landscape was entirely mountainous, with towns, villages strung out along the Strandlatten, or coastal brim. Nearly half a mile from Svolvær itself, the isolated bunker faced the open sea of the Vesterfjorden. The ethereal colours of sunrise and sunset were often trapped in the mirror-like surface of the water, but today the sea was black and brooding, surging across the broken shoreline with fretted waves and a sticky white foam. Sunset was but a band of tarnished gold in a grey sky, heavy with low cloud, spilling an uneasy glow across the rocks and the red-painted Råbjerg. Because the harbour was so deep and could accommodate large transport ships, it was important to the strategic needs of the fatherland. There were rumours the British commandos were planning a raid because Svolvær is an important centre for the production of fish oil and glycerine, used in the German war effort. The clusters of serrated rocks that jutted out from the water formed a good natural defence, but he did not like those rocks. They suggested strange shapes and outlines in certain light. And tonight, a sense of what? Menace in the sky? Foreboding? Eric hated it. The impression had only grown since they first arrived to take over the bunker. It was as if there was tragedy woven into the fabric of the mountains that surrounded them. Something bad was going to happen soon. He could feel it in his blood. The smell of cooking caught his senses and distracted him from his gloomy thoughts. Turning away, he barked an order at Schenk, who was sitting on a balcony below the observation deck, cleaning the bolt-action mechanism for his K-98. Take over the night watch, Schenk. Seppel Schenk, a reptile of a man, tall and gangly with a high, steeply sloping forehead and a greasy mop of brown hair. He had the black, lackluster eyes of a predatory creature and was the only soldier Eric had ever commanded who actually took pleasure in killing. As Eric trotted down the concrete steps, Schenk pushed himself wearily up from the chair and slouched past without acknowledgement. A candidate for discipline, Eric mused wearily. I'll come back to relieve you once I eat, Schenk, Eric called over his shoulder as he climbed the wooden staircase from the balcony down to the concrete bowels of the bunker. This place, Svolver, had gnawed away at the confidence of his men. It had eroded their discipline and made them only half the soldiers he knew they were. Two men occupied the ground floor mess. Corbinian Sturm, who was cooking a fish stew on his portable stove. Large, bald and sweaty, he was reliable and trustworthy. Winfried Dirks, a giant within the harsh features of a philosopher, sat nearby, sharpening a paratrooper knife he had traded in Oslo, and doing little to help with the cooking. Dirks worked on the knife and looked like a man concentrating on not going insane. Yes, Brun had got inside his head. Torbin Brun was out with the young and impressionable Quirin Seacart. Both had been commandeered by Hauptmann Rask to look for the missing cadet, Krebs. Whatever Krebs had been up to, it wasn't sanctioned by his chain of command, and now rumours were flying around that the Order of the Black Sun were operating in the area, and that Krebs was one of them, an acolyte hunting the origins of Germanic supremacy in the bloodlines of an old race. It was why his men were scared, not because of the risk of British commanders raiding Svolver, but because Torbin Brun had filled their silly heads with stories about the Black Sun and what they could do. It smells good, Sturm, Eric complimented, pausing as he walked to inspect the contents of the pan. Torbin Brun hero-worshipped his SS brother, and by association seemed to worship the Black Sun units who were known to ride alongside SS Sonderkommando and the Waffen-SS. If the Black Sun were here, it might explain why Krebs had gone missing. But why would they not present themselves in the settlement? At least make their presence known. All this secrecy. Eric was deeply suspicious about their motives. Brun talked proudly about the advantage the Black Sun would bring to Germany, but Eric had asked questions and heard other things from officers at the whaling station in Andenes and at the industrial wars at Narvik. Some people did not believe their motives of the Order of the Black Sun were entirely aligned with the supremacy of German blood over Europe. The Black Sun. The way their reputation was weaving its way into the imagination of the German fighters, it bothered him. A commotion sounded outside the steel door to the bunker, and a moment later, Brun and Seacart crashed through, wrestling with a savage-looking woman with dark hair, dressed in rags and blankets. Eric span round, dismayed. Sturm and Dirks leapt to their feet and hurried over to help restrain her. Sturm took a heavy punch to the face from the woman, which caused him to drop to his knees, stunned, clutching a bleeding nose. Dirks didn't take such risks. He swiftly kicked the woman in the groin and pistoned a fierce fist to the side of her skull as she doubled over. Enough! Eric yelled, sensing Dirks' desire to continue the violence. The giant Dirks stepped back, responding to authority, but cast a sullen glance towards his commanding officer. Eric returned the bowl and spooned the table and strode across. The woman hung limply between both soldiers, but as he approached, her shoulders and head began shaking with a slow, triumphant laughter bubbling from her lips. She angled her head to peer at him through a curtain of lank, greasy hair, brown-skinned. Her face was young, but creased like a leathery hag. Her eyes were strange, small, black, glinting. That was when he noticed the blood coating her hands, sticky, not fresh, and the smears of it on her filthy clothing. Woman, where did this blood come from? Eric demanded. Brun shook his head, all jaw, cheekbones, blue eyes and blonde hair, and told him, she does not speak German. She raised in some Norwegian dialect. I could understand her, but only just. Eric didn't show his irritation at Brun's tone, or the fact they had brought the woman here rather than Hauptmann Rask, who was responsible for the military hold on Svolver, and the dozen or so squads of here within it. Can you talk to her? Why is she covered in blood? Bruin reinforced his brutal grip on her arms, using his strength to force a jolt of pain through her joints that made the laughter stop momentarily. We heard her on patrol, up behind the slopes here, behind the mountain. He sneered and jerked his head at the bunker's open door. She was howling, like a valkyrie. We found her by a small altar of stone, blood everywhere. The overweight form of Sturm clambered to his feet, holding a hand over his nose, mumbling something about her being a witch. Brun grinned at this suggestion, pleased by it, and he nodded. Yes, a witch. Where did the blood come from? She is not wounded. No animals were there. And where is Krebs? Nobody has seen him. Why was she there, overlooking our position? The naive Quirin Seekart glanced from Brun to Eric and found his gaze, imploring him to do something that would make them proud. See her eyes? I think she is one of the Sami people. Why would she be here but to put a curse on us? Cold air was swirling in through the open door. Sturm shuffled over to close it, but Eric hurled words at him. Nein! Noch nicht! Everyone stopped and stared at him. Eric sighed, gathering his patience. The Sami have nothing to do with the war, and they are not witches or warlocks. This woman looks like she is crazy. Take her to Rask, and leave him to deal with it. It was not the right thing to say, of course, but Eric had not reached his rank by always pleasing his men. But then the woman caught his eye with her gaze, which was smiling, mocking him. She spoke to him, at him. Du in Christin? Eric sensed he knew what statement she had made. He replied in German, I am a Christian, yes. More words in Norwegian. Eric bunched his cheeks beneath his eyes in a grimace. He looked at Brun. What did she say? She wants you to listen. She says you're not blinded by fear like we are. Is that right, eh? Brun gave her a harsh shake between him and Seekart, barked a quick laugh in her contempt. The woman held Eric's attention like a snake might to capture a mouse. She continued, relentless, more words in Norwegian. Brun started to translate, his words hurriedly overlapping hers as he rushed to catch up. Men are coming, men who need the way to be open. She has opened the way. The way is open. Tell her to shut up, Dirk shouted, his titan frame hunched over as he shuffled away from her. Her eyes didn't waver from Eric. More words in Norwegian. Brun's lips rolled back to expose bare teeth, his eyes alive with a wild fire as he translated. The stars are aligned beyond the void. The one who listens has heard her call. Even now it moves, falling through the void, towards us. You cannot stop this. The way is open. Sturm grabbed his wood-handled boot knife and edged forward, seemingly intent on using it. Dirk stopped retreating and surged forwards to join in. Halt! Eric boomed the word, causing everyone to freeze in their tracks. Even the Sami woman with her damnable raving fell silent, watching him. Eric inhaled slowly through his nose, diaphragm trembling in the core of his chest. The woman had unsettled him. He vividly recalled the sense of doom that had sprung upon him earlier. Placing hands on hips, he puffed his chest up, pushed his jaw forward. Take her to Rask. She is his problem. If she is a witch, then I doubt she will have much luck with a man so ignorant as the subtle ways of nature. It was true. Rask would rather burn a tree than enjoy its shape or the colour of canopy. Sturm clasped his free hand to the bald dome of his skull, spearing his own blood across it, and shuffled away. Dirk seemed unable to move. He glared at the woman, but she kept her eyes on Eric. Even as Brun and Seekart dragged her away, she twisted her head at a painful angle and held him in her gaze. And then they were gone from the bunker. Close that damn door, he ordered Sturm, gruffly. Then softened his tone a little to add, go clean your face, and then come and finish cooking this fish stew. It smells too good to wait much longer. Sturm did as he was told and walked to the latrine to wash the blood away. Eric glanced upwards and saw the reptilian figure of Schenk standing at the wooden rail that stopped soldiers falling onto the balcony below. That was a mistake. Arching his spine to tilt backwards, he called back up. Yes, thank you for your opinion. I'm sure your option would be to gut her open on the floor here and see her innards turn to smoke. Get back to your watch, Schenk. I'll relieve you when you have eaten. The massive Dirks muttered something and then strode to the door. Eric whirled round and called after him, but Dirks either didn't hear or didn't care, hauling the steel door open and closing it after him like it was part of a child's toy. Eric finally got to eat, which was a pleasant, even if he sat alone at the table. Sturm did not want to engage with him, and remained by the stove stirring the food. It had been a mistake to send the woman away with him, of course. Eric climbed up the wooden steps to the balcony and then up the concrete steps to the observation gallery. He took over from Schenk and lit another cigarette as he stared into the darkness beyond the wide aperture. Chilly night air pushed through and swirled around him. Brun, Sikart, and Dirks all returned together, furtive and silent. Sikart seemed shaken and appalled by something. Brun led him into the latrine. Dirks slumped down in front of the oil-burning heater and appeared to collapse in on himself, sobbing. Eric wrestled with the surge of panic and anger that welled up from his stomach into his brain. It took him nearly an hour before he felt capable of going down to ask what had taken place. He learned the truth easily. Nobody could deny it. None of them wanted to deny it. They were proud of what they had done, even if they were also upset by it. Brun, Sikart, and Dirks had killed the woman. They beat her with their fists, and then Sikart, his use forever spoiled from this point forward, he had strangled the life out of her. They had wrapped rocks in her rags, carried her and dumped her body in the sea overlooking the island of Akoya. That was it then. That was the end of it. The witch was dead. No, not the end. Eric sensed a trap had been sprung, and the only way of closing it had died with the woman's last grinning breath. Eric resumed the night watch. Brun, Sikart, Dirks, and Schenk slept in their cots near to the radiating heat of the oil burner. Sturm had come over to take over at some point, but Eric waved him away. He couldn't sleep. He didn't want to take his eyes off the sky or the sea. Something was coming. That's what she had said. What was coming? What couldn't they stop? The air flooding through the open gallery numbed his face and hands, buried through his coat and uniform, impaled shards of ice into his bones. He gritted his teeth and stood through it. He was a German soldier. He could suffer with honor. He smoked the last of his Extines at 4 o'clock in the morning. His eyes roamed the empty space ahead of him. The void, eh? But nothing broke the darkness. He thought of the Sami woman. Where was her body now? Had it sunk, or had it tumbled free of the rags and their rocks to float up and drift? It was nearly 6:30 when the dawn finally arrived. With some relief, Eric saw that the heavy clouds had retreated to the horizon, allowing a pale blue with streaks of cerise and new gold to sweep across the heavens. Then the fiery blister of the sun rolled above the horizon, spinning furnace light across the sea towards him. Yet his rising mood crashed like a wrecked ship on a perilous shore when he saw the black silhouette of a figure, the shadow of a man, step out onto the rocks. Only 100 meters away, perhaps less, the figure was dressed in a uniform and seemed to be staring intently directly at the bunker. Eric span away to the wooden railing and hollered at the top of his voice, yelled until his throat was raw. The men leapt from their cots, dressed and responded to his orders, more out of sleepy instinct than any sense of loyalty or respect. Dirks was to guard the entrance with the M34 machine gun. Eric turned back to the observation gallery window whilst Brun, Sikart, and Schenk dashed down to the rowing boat moored at the foundations of the bunker. The silhouetted figure, Eric was certain of it was an officer, stepped from one shallow ridge of black rock to another, surrounded by the lapping swells of the open sea. Perhaps it was a British spy. Then the figure waved an arm, as if it knew it had his attention, as if trying to warn him. And then it vanished, perhaps stepping behind a larger rock. Eric wasn't certain. He had only blinked and then the figure was gone. A few moments later, the tiny boat appeared below his position and began to approach the rocks as instructed. Brun and Sikart rowed while Schenk crouched at the bow with his Carabiner 98 Kurz ready and aimed. Eric dry swallowed several times, watching their progress. He was worried that the silhouette would appear suddenly and shoot his men. He was worried the silhouette wouldn't appear at all. They reached the rocks. Schenk leapt from the tiny boat and searched every nook and cranny, but it rapidly became clear nobody was there. When the three soldiers returned, derision was stenciled across the smoke rings of their faces. No doubt Brun had made some comments whilst rowing back. Dirks muttered something under his breath and went back to his cot with the machine gun. Sturm politely suggested Eric had spent too much time staring out the window. Eric politely advised Sturm he was close to being hurled into the stockade for questioning his ability to perform a simple role. He grabbed Sturm's packet of Lucky Strikes from the soldier's tunic and walked away. The mood within the bunker continued to deteriorate from that point. Eric remained in the observation gallery, smoking, whilst Brunn, Sturm, and Schenk talked quietly at the mess table. Brunn, looking like a Teutonic lord, Sturm, nursing his bruised nose, and Schenk, the snake. Sikard sat by the radio, set with the headphones on, a thousand-yard stare, looking like a boy who had lost all innocence. Returning to his watch, Eric squinted as the rising sun sparkled and glinted off the sea. Were the British coming? He wondered. Maybe the silhouette had been waving at his co-conspirators, seeking rescue before the rowboat reached them. That was plausible. Perhaps there was a U-boat under the surface in preparation for the attack, a botched attempt at landing a spy. Yes, it made sense. Yet Eric resisted the urge to inform Hauptmann Rask in case there really was something wrong with him, a malfunction within his mind. The men started to behave strangely, and Eric, standing on his perch above the bowels of the bunker, realized he was trapped by them. No way out except through the steel door below. It started with Schenk, standing up from the table, clutching his strange-shaped head and stumbling silently to the door. Sturm called after him, but Brunn grabbed his arm where they sat and held him back. Brunn's attitude was to watch as Schenk whirled around, away from the door, his eyes bulging, hands like rigid claws against his skull, mouth parts working to utter some sound that never came. Then he stopped, slowly lowered his hands and stood motionless, staring at a wall, muttering. Sturm slapped both hands across the top of his bald dome and began to drag his fingers down his face, making baby sounds and rolling out fat lips. Brunn eased himself up from the chair, the mask of arrogant confidence now cracking as he began to perceive something was pressing down upon them. Eric felt it too, above them, a weight or force. It ended with Sikart crying out and leaping away from the radio set. The headphones tumbled to the concrete floor, the cable snapped. He claimed he had heard the woman's voice whispering through the chatter of German officers. The mountain! It was the mountain! Schenk snapped out of his daze, grabbed him roughly and demanded to know what the woman could have said when she was dead. Brunn expounded, succumbing to the babbling madness. It was the swell of a goat, the tall pinnacle at the southwest face of the mountain. It had a two-pronged rock formation that made it look like a troll's molar tooth or a radio antenna beaming into the void. Or the horns of the devil, Storm pointed out. Eric stood silently observing from above as Sturm and Brunn closed in on Sikard, who was helpless in Schenk's vice-like grip. What had the woman said? They wanted to know. What was the mountain doing? Was it broadcasting her message from the horns? None of what they were saying made any sense. And then Dirks woke up, rising from his cot like a nightmare, a giant demon wrapped in the field-grey uniform and bottle-green collars, the fabric stretched as his muscles worked, shoving the buttstock into his hip and swinging right to left and back again, finger pressing hard on the trigger, unleashing fire and a holy cacophony of noise in the enclosed space. So much noise, Eric mercifully did not hear the screams of the four men being gunned down. The noise stopped. Great clouds of shattered concrete dust and cordite boiled upwards from the belly of the bunker. Dirks would have to be dealt with. Eric unholstered the Walter P-38 from his side and quickly marched down the concrete steps to the balcony. The stench of cordite grew stronger, but didn't obscure the reek of human excrement from below. He coughed as the clouds of dust rolled up over him. Visibility dropped to almost none. Eric chambered around. As he carefully approached the wooden steps leading into the maelstrom, he heard the sounds of a struggle happening somewhere unseen below him. A grunt. A scream that withered into a gurgling, heaving wheeze. When he eventually reached the bottom, Eric stood by the steps, holding on as if they were a lifeline to some pathetic notion of escape. The dust and smoke began to clear and revealed a scene of horror not unfamiliar to him, the bodies of men he had known lying dead or dying amongst a carnage of machine gun fire. Uniforms tattered and stained in blood. The scene was made more eerie by the golden light streaming in through the observation galley high above, causing some of the shadows down here to deepen in contrast to the beams of light. He found Brunn alive, barely. Beside him lay the gargantuan corpse of Dirks, spear through the neck with his paratrooper knife.
My brother,
Bruin gasped. Eric frowned, squatted down beside him and deftly examined half a dozen bullet wounds puncturing Bruin's left bicep, thorax, abdomen and thigh. He was leaking blood too fast to be saved.
Your brother? Is that who's out there?
Bruin's face twisted with pain. He shook his head, gulping air, struggling to talk.
Mountain, Black Sun, up there, the woman, Krebs, sacrifice.
Ice water seeped into his veins. Eric's features formed the visage of a snarl.
You know this?
Sweat was pouring down Bruin's face, mixing with a coating of white dust that made him look crazy. He glanced briefly at his own wounds and could see he was done for.
No, guessing. Makes sense.
Rubbish. What about us? What about you? Would the Black Sun sacrifice us too for whatever this woman claims to have done? Brun's blue eyes were half-lidded now. They stared into Eric's with a horrible certainty. Yes, the Black Sun would allow anything to happen, even to good German soldiers. The life ebbed from Brun in the next few moments. The harsh final breath came with a rattle Eric had heard from dying men dozens of times before. Something interrupted the gilded light streaming in from above. Eric twisted round and stood, staring up at the wide slit in the observation gallery. The sky was different. It was changing. He went to the steel door, hurled it open and dashed outside. Sucking in great breaths of fresh sea air, clouds of dust billowing from his uniform, he scrambled down the rocky path to the shore and nearly fell over in shock when what he saw. The sunlight was buckling. A vast dome-like shape was forming in the sky ahead of him, like the nose of a rocket made of fire, trailing tendrils of heat that was now distorting the air around them. But there was nothing there, just sunlight being forced back by... Eric span round and angled his head upwards and saw a hole or something. He couldn't describe it. His brain couldn't fathom it. Something was there and growing larger. He turned back to the open sea. The surface of the water was frothing in the heat coming down from above. He needed the better view of the hole in the sky. He needed to see what was beyond. What was coming through? The notion was as insane as him jumping into the rowing boat, untying the rope and grabbing the oars to power himself across the shallow ridge of black rocks where he had seen the silhouette. It wasn't rational, it was a compulsion. He had to do this. It was what was needed for him to be there, the witness. All the time he kept his eyes on the sky above the bunker where the hole continued to expand. Shouts of alarm were coming from the settlement. Eric pictured the squads of men mobilizing under Rask's command. What would they think when they came to the bunker? The furious blister of compressed and repelled sunlight flexed violently. A concussion wave detonated like thunder and echoed off the mountains. The air became like a furnace around him, and then hotter still. The sea started to heave, as if it were a giant beast trying to wriggle and turn away from the heat. The paintwork on the rowboat began to bubble and peel. Eric gritted his teeth around a howl of pain streaming from his throat. His hands, his face, burning. He rowed on, relentless. Eyes fixed on what was now taking shape above. The boat nearly smashed apart as it struck the rocks. The impact jarred him, knocked the oars from his hands, which were red and blistering. He managed to stop himself from falling backwards. Getting to his feet, he stumbled out of the smoking shallow wood and clambered onto the rocks. Heat haze filled the horizon around him. A large wave crashed against the rocks and showered him in a spray of water and foam. It was wonderful. He laughed and staggered up a serrated mound of black, irregular rock and found a vantage point to observe from. The air was becoming cooler. He turned and cast his gaze back towards the shore. The bunker was baking in the furnace heat. The bulging crown of repelled sunlight had shifted forwards and was now searing the landscape in waterfalls and tendrils of fire. Eric could hear the screams of the men and women in Solva, soldiers and locals burning alive. The Order of the Black Sun were not here. The Sami woman had opened the way. She had fulfilled a vast sacrifice for them. His eyes were drawn upwards, towards the rim of her shape. It was a sound, a colour, a mass of substance that was not material, but a swirling vortex of the outer chaos that smashed against his senses and shattered all his understanding of logic and perception and reality. The bulk of it was spreading outwards to reveal an inner core. The fabric of light and time was shredding apart. Something was showing itself. Something was coming through. For an unknown reason, he dropped his gaze back to the bunker a feeling of being watched. No, the words screamed from his heat-seared throat and cracked his charred lips. No! He stepped to another rock, raised his arm in agony and waved it, warning the figure who stood at the wide slit of the observation gallery. Run! Save yourself! The figure just stood there, staring as if transfixed. The uniform, the modified peak of the field cap. In a singular moment of paralyzing horror, Eric realized the figure he was looking at was him. He had seen his own smoldering form through the warped lens of space and time, a parody of annihilation, a mockery of insanity. He had witnessed his own fate before it had happened. Eric stood there as a curtain of darkness swept the sky away, leaving a burning hole of brilliant, dazzling light, whiter than white. And he knew that this was the Black Sun. The air boiled, but his lungs did not wither. The sea collapsed and then rose up in a heaving wave, but his body was not washed away. As the Black Sun peered through the weird hole caused by this cosmic alignment, all light was sucked to the edges, so that every building and form of landscape appeared to be black, framed in dazzling, burning penumbra. Eric stared into the primordial darkness, even as his eyes melted in their sockets and the optic nerves fused with the alien energy pouring through them directly into his brain. Abruptly as it began, it ended. The stars were no longer in alignment. The way that had been opened, now closed. His vision remained despite the lack of eyes. His awareness came through other senses. His situation was tragic. Everything is wrapped in silence. The sea crashes against the rocks without noise. The seagulls wheel overhead with voiceless cries. Looking at his hands, shivering and drifting like smoke held together by some clever conjuring trick, Eric understands. He is out of time, outside of time, existing in a shattered fragment of the world he was once in, neither here nor there, locked between a gap in time and space, a shadow bound to exist forever, a shadow of the Black Sun.
Thank you very much, David. If anybody notices the angles in this room deforming and becoming strange and non-Euclidean, everybody get out quickly, okay? Because you never know what we might have summoned this evening. Okay, so it's now time for people to replenish their glasses, have a quick chat, check up on the football scores or whatever it is you want to do, and we will reconvene in a few minutes' time with Mr. Pete Sutton.
BristolCon Fringe is a monthly reading series produced by the BristolCon Foundation. Our thanks to the Shakespeare Tavern for providing us with a venue. The music at the beginning of this podcast is The Future by Chevy 174.